You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In the course of his many provocative documentaries, including A Thin Blue Line, The Fog of War, and Standard Operating Procedure, Errol Morris has delved deeply into topics in a search for truths that can be quite difficult to find. His latest, his 10th, is called The Unknown Known, and it's no exception as he gives us an in-depth look at Donald Rumsfeld, who served as George W. Bush's Secretary of Defense, and as such was a principal architect of the Iraq War. The Unknown Known opens today at the Angelica and the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas, and I'm very pleased that Errol Morris was able to join us again. Hello.
Thank you for having me back here. It seems like I never left.
Well, you make good films. You make interesting films. We invite you back. Do you see a thread in all of these films? Or do you see them as somehow related?
Well, there's one obvious thread. I made all of them.
Yeah, and is that it?
There must be something more. I don't want to be disingenuous here, but I can't imagine two more different individuals, Donald Rumsfeld and Robert S. McNamara.
Although there are a lot of similarities in the initial premise of the two, they both had led us into wars. The difference is that McNamara seems to regret much of what he did, and Donald Rumsfeld seems to be trying to avoid discussing what he did.
I take it a step further. Donald Rumsfeld seems proud of everything he did.
Hasn't he kept himself out of the spotlight since he left office? Was it hard to convince him to be interviewed for the film?
He hasn't kept himself out of the spotlight at all.
I just haven't been aware.
He made a comment just yesterday about Barack Obama and Afghanistan, comparing Obama invidiously to a monkey.
Yeah, well, he does that whole thing about the I can't remember what the word is, the monkey thing. People took this as racist, but he's been using that same phrase over the years when it had absolutely nothing to do with African-American presidents. So this is one of his lines. He has certain things that, little phrases that he repeats again and again. Anyway, that I just read a defense of him on that regard, not that they were defending his criticism of Barack Obama.
To me, he's like whack-a-mole. You know, he gets knocked down and pops up in some other unexpected place and has often weighed in against the Obama administration and praising the policies of the Bush administration.
Well, you didn't pursue much the whole business of his going into Afghanistan with what was later considered to be an inadequate force.
Iraq, you mean?
Well, first it was Afghanistan, where Osama bin Laden was able to escape because we were really relying on the warlords to do the work that the American military would have been expected to do. And then in Iraq, where soldiers were actually writing home and asking their parents to send them body armor. So you didn't pursue that because... Or did you ask that and just didn't make it in the film?
You have to understand, I don't want to assume a lecturing tone here.
But please do.
Oh, no. You can't make me do that. But there's an idea, perhaps call it a conceit of the unknown known. History from the inside out. I'm interested in something very specific. Using his endless memos, his so-called snowflakes, called snowflakes because he produced tens of thousands of them, I use the memos and my interviews as a way inside in. How does Donald Rumsfeld see himself? How does he explain what he has or he hasn't done? How does he justify the policies that he was so much a part of?
Well, those memos would suggest that he sees himself as a man of words, and that's why he has made some of these what I think he is very proud of statements. He is quite clever with words, seems to be enjoying making convoluted witticisms when he has to answer a difficult question.
Can't disagree.
You convinced him to read some of those memos aloud on camera, especially the one that included the words you use in the title of the film, The Unknown Known. Did you immediately know that you would want to use that as the film's title?
Thought I would use it from pretty early on because it's the most enigmatic of that combination of words, known and unknown. I think I know what the known known is. I think I know what the known unknown is, and so on and so forth. But that one might be just gobbledygook.
Although it sounds quite clever. Philosophical.
Well, that's the genius of Donald Rumsfeld, of saying things that sound clever, but on closer examination are less so.
When he used that phrase in 2002 during a press conference, what was the response? What did reporters say in reaction?
I would urge your listeners to read my four-part essay that now appears online in the New York Times on the certainty of Donald Rumsfeld. The first part went up last night. The second part goes up tonight, where I try to deal with these expressions. He first used it in a press conference in 2002. It was a response to a very specific question about evidence. Mm. Sir, what evidence do you have that Saddam Hussein is providing terrorist organizations with WMD? Never answered it. Instead, he went into the laundry list. The known known, the known unknown, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And another reporter says, but sir, you're not answering the question. What evidence do you have? It cuts to the heart of how he dealt with the press and with the American public.
And he says to you, the absence of evidence isn't evidence of absence.
The most pernicious phrase of all. It was used by Carl Sagan in reference to extraterrestrial life.
So he was just quoting Carl Sagan?
Who knows who he was quoting? The universe is a large place. Maybe if you root around long enough out there, you're going to find something intelligent. But he applied it to WMD in Iraq. Let me ask you a question.
Okay. Let's see how evasive I can be.
I'm looking forward to it. You're a UN weapons inspector.
Hans
Leonard
Blick.
Lopate. No, you're Leonard Lopate, UN weapons inspector.
Okay.
Hell with Hans Blix. You go into a factory which was supposed to be a factory providing chemical and biological weapons. You search it thoroughly. You find nothing. Absence of evidence or evidence of absence? The example I give, someone tells you there's an elephant in the room. You open the door. You look in the room. You open the cabinets, drawers. Get down on your knees, and peer under the bed, can't find an elephant.
But I can say, well, maybe there was an elephant there, but they took it out because they knew we were coming.
You could indeed say that.
And that's what we often heard at that time. Do you think that he was one of the main architect of the war in Iraq, or should we see this as a team effort from him, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, and some of the other key figures in the Bush administration?
I think he was the key figure. I've always objected when the Vietnam War has been called McNamara's War because I truly believe that it was Johnson's war, that McNamara was following Johnson's policies. This is a very different situation. Johnson was a very strong, not weak president. George W. Bush was an unelected and weak president, and for all intents and purposes, control vested to Donald Rumsfeld and Richard B. Cheney.
Well, Dick Cheney has also participated in a film. Have you compared, thought about the way the two presented themselves?
Well, of course I have. I rather like the Dick Cheney film, although, again, it's the opposite of what I have done.
Well, he totally justifies himself. What Rumsfeld seems to be doing is playing with words and showing you how clever he is. And then when he says something that he's particularly pleased by, he gives you this strange smile that he has.
The infernal grin. My wife compares him to the Cheshire Cat. Because at the end of the movie, all you're really left with is the smile, is the grin. Alice says about the Cheshire Cat, I have often seen a cat without a grin, but I've never seen a grin without a cat.
Now, when you went into this, did you expect him to be more like Robert McNamara or Lindy England, the Army specialist who was featured in Standard Operating Procedure? People who have thought about what they did since and have become rather self-critical?
I go into every interview expecting to hear something that I have not expected. I've often thought, if I know exactly what I'm going to hear, why bother?
Mm-hmm. But so what happened here?
What happened here was very strange. Strange for so many, many reasons. A total absence of self-awareness, little reflection, overwhelming vanity. On the other hand, incredibly charming, well-spoken, cooperative, came to Boston again and again and again, gave me access to these thousands of memos, was willing to read them.
He also gave you insight into his marriage.
Gave me insight into so many, many different things. And yet at the end, I'm left with this hollow feeling, as if somehow he doesn't even know why he did what he did.
I'm talking with Errol Morris, who won an Oscar for The Fog of War, his film about Robert S. McNamara. And now we have one about Donald Rumsfeld called The Unknown Known, which opens today at the Angelica and Lincoln Plaza Cinemas. At the end of the film, you ask him why he agreed to do the film. And obviously, after all of the time you spent with him, you were still wondering why he had agreed. What was his answer?
It's a question that almost everybody asks me. Because I believe they're genuinely puzzled. Why would he talk to you? What did he think he was doing? So I ask him the question. I say, sir, why are you talking to me? Why are you doing this? And his answer, it's a two-part answer. The first part is, that's a vicious question. That's a vicious question. And the second part, I'll be darned if I know.
Well, one can only guess that he likes the idea of a film being made about him. And maybe he also feels that he is clever enough to change the public's opinion of him.
I believe you're correct about both.
What happened when...
Am I slavishly agreeing with you here?
Well, if you agree with me, that's nice. You can also disagree with me. I suspect that somewhere down the line you will. What happened when he read the Haines memo in front of you, the memo that authorized torture techniques for Abu Ghraib? Had he read it before?
Didn't seem as though he had read it carefully.
It would have crossed his desk, wouldn't it?
After all, they would never call these torture techniques. We're talking about enhanced interrogation here, not torture. Mm. Okay, I would call it torture, but he would not. So here you have this long, long list. And at first he refused to read it. And then, much to my surprise, he went through the whole thing. And he's reading and he's reading and he's reading, including that notation, notorious handwritten notation about standing for hours upon hours saying, I don't see the problem here. I stand all day at my desk at the Pentagon. At the end, he interrupts himself and says, good grief, that's a pile of stuff. As if he himself is amazed by what's contained in that memo.
Now, you don't try to contradict him in the documentary.
Yes and no.
Well, you contradict him in another way. You use a lot of newspaper headlines and clips from press conferences that call into question some of the things he's just said.
One good example, he claims that the techniques used at Guantanamo never, his word, migrated from Guantanamo to Afghanistan and to Iraq. So I read him one of the investigative reports by a former Secretary of Defense, James Schlesinger, and Schlesinger says, they did migrate. Mm-hmm. So a moment ago he says, they didn't migrate. Read in the report, they did migrate. And by the way, they obviously did migrate. His response, I'd agree with that.
That's what he said? I'd agree with that?
I'd agree with that.
What did he mean when he called the attack on Pearl Harbor a failure of imagination on the part of the U.S. government?
I think it's another version of Rumsfeld gobbledygook. Was Pearl Harbor a failure of imagination? What do we mean by that? A failure to imagine Pearl Harbor? A failure to imagine 9/11?
Well, I guess in the case of Pearl Harbor, maybe he felt that the United States had some warnings that there might be some kind of attack on a U.S. military facility by the Japanese.
That's not a failure of imagination. That's a failure to look at the available evidence and to act accordingly. I compare it in my New York Times essay to the story of Chicken Little. Everybody knows about Chicken Little. Chicken Little is sitting in the farmyard, and an acorn falls on his head. On the basis of fairly scant evidence, he decides the sky is falling.
By the way, he named that acorn Saddam.
Thank you very much, sir. The other barnyard animals become hysterical. Henny Penny, Turkey Lurkey, Goosey Lucy. They start running around. Foxy Loxy is watching all of this, amused, and sees the possibility of a really satisfying lunch, and he eats them all. My point is that Rumsfeld became the boy who cried Armageddon. Saddam has nuclear weapons. He has WMD. He's coming for us. He's going to destabilize the entire area of the Middle East unless we get him first, unless we preempt his destructive abilities.
He later offered to resign, and was rebuffed, but then he was forced to resign. How did he explain that and his feelings at the time?
I think it's called fired.
Mm-hmm. Well, but often what happens is you're told you're going to write a letter of resignation.
This happened in a weird way, but why quibble?
Yeah, okay. So what was his explanation? Did he feel that his time had come?
At the end?
Yeah. It's humiliating to be fired.
One of the things that he objected to in The Unknown Known, and I showed him four or five rough cuts during the editing of the movie. He had no control, but I showed the film to him. I asked him for comments. I myself have been the recipient of five or six Donald Rumsfeld snowflakes.
Hmm.
He didn't like how he left the Pentagon. George Bush gives him a pat on the back, almost like he's patting a dog, and then shows him to the door. He wanted the full heraldry and regalia, of his departure from the Pentagon. He wanted to be seen as leaving triumphantly rather than in disgrace. And I refused to change it.
He asked you to do that despite the fact that he didn't leave triumphantly. Does he think he did?
According to you, Mr. Lopate, but not according to him.
Do you wish you had asked anything differently?
Always. Unlike Rumsfeld, I live in a sea of regret. There's probably not one thing I can imagine having done in my life that I can't imagine having done better.
Well, in the case of McNamara, part of the satisfaction is Robert McNamara comes across as a man who has learned from what happened. He explains what happened and how he did what he did and then talks about his regrets. In this case, we have a man who doesn't seem to regret anything. Do you think that that makes for as successful an explanation of Donald Rumsfeld as the McNamara did for McNamara?
If the goal is to capture something real about the person you have in front of your camera, yes. And that is my job. Someone criticized The Unknown Known. I won't mention names. Because it didn't have a redemptive ending, unlike The Fog of War. By the way,
that's what I was leading to. There is a feeling of redemption with Robert McNamara, which makes it feel so satisfying.
I don't think the ending of The Fog of War is redemptive at all, McNamara tells us, even though he says Vietnam was a mistake. He tells us that rationality will not save us. Rationality... he built his entire life on the belief that there are rational solutions to political, economic problems. A despairing line, if anything. The goal to me in making a movie is not creating redemption or faux redemption. I'm a Jew from Long Island, by the way, not a Catholic priest. I don't hear confession. I hear stories. And I have made many, many movies about self-deception. Nothing is as good as this one.
Well, A Thin Blue Line, of course, you got somebody freed from prison. So that was a redemption story as well. I guess people expect them from you. But this is a fascinating character study called The Unknown Known. It opens today at the Angelica and Lincoln Plaza Cinemas. And my great thanks to Errol Morris, the Oscar Award-winning filmmaker for The Fog of War. Maybe you'll get another Oscar for this one. Thank you for being on our show.
Thank you, Leonard. A pleasure to be back.